up, ladies and gentlemen? This is Matthew Mostly McConaughey.
Ladies.
Yeah.
Mostly ladies.
Mostly. Well, I'm a married man now, Mike. I got to tone it down just a little bit, brother. But
looks like you need to eat a little, too.
Yeah, man. My energy level isn't what it normally is. I mean, sometimes you see me in the magazines, you know, I'm always on the beach training, my shirt's off, you know, having a good time, all right, you know, staying in shape. But for this new movie, boy, I had to slim down a little bit. So I tell everybody now, if you bring McDonald's around me, we are not friends anymore.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you're starting to look like Mike Bauman, man. It's
Well, you know what? He's a sexy-looking guy, you know what I mean? And he's a skinny dude, too, but I think even he's got a couple pounds on me right now.
I've been wearing
girls' jeans right now, brother. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, who would ever thought, right? I mean, I
got a nice ass, man.
Yeah, you know, that's the one positive thing about wearing these.
That's not positive, dude.
Hey, but the ladies see it. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
You know, but it's cool. Should be a good movie. You know what I'm saying? It's all part of that method acting.
Yeah. What about your Brad Pitt buddy?
I got a major stash going on too.
Yeah, you did.
That? Yeah, it's cool.
Your buddy Brad Pitt's new movie opened up.
Oh, the gangster flick. Yeah. Wow, that's a long fart there.
That was a bad open.
See, but that's the one good thing is I don't do the McDonald's anymore because I got to lose this weight, so I don't have to worry about farts like that right
all
now.
Right. I thought you and Brad were like good buddies, and he's a
good guy, man. I hate to see his film do the way it did to start out. You know, you put a hard work into a project, the last thing you want to do is see it. You know, do that in the first weekend. You know what I mean?
Duty. But $7 million.
But he'll be all right, though, all right, man. He's he's Brad Pitt.
Well, he's got like 27 right. kids to prop him up. So he's cool.
Yeah, that dude will be cool. But this is Bauman's Breakdown, and this is Matthew McConaughey coming in for you, giving a little Southern flavor. No, it's not. It is Mike Bauman, and I just was in a McConaughey mood this morning.
That was quite the open for you. You and McConaughey on this foggy morning.
Yeah. A little mystical outside.
Yeah, it's mystical.
The ladies love the mystery. But yeah, man, it's this is episode Schneikes. I think we're on 11 now with Bauman's Breakdown
or something. Yeah, it's been there a while.
Getting a little dirty, a little dirty.
It's Monday morning for us.
It is Monday morning. I was actually a couple little minutes later than what I told Mikey I was going to be, which I pride myself in being a man of my word, so I always have those little guilt trips. Like, I got
to
stop.
Well, it's foggy. You had a reason. I don't have to go out and videotape today. We don't have any basketball games till Thursday, and today's going to be a day of just begging people for money. It's begging people for money day.
It's advertising money day, baby. Yep. And today I gotta work second shift at my other job at Le Hospital, so
you're a doctor.
Yeah.
You know. A couple of heart surgeries in there.
Right. You know, you knock it out. You know what I mean? It's like anything.
Grafting a couple of hands back on today.
Exactly, man. Yeah. It's all about getting in the flow, baby. Cool. You know what I do? I just put on some Huey Lewis in the news when I'm in that operating room, boy. It just gets me real relaxed. I cut open that sternum and I'm just ready to go. All right.
Put a couple of new sets of lips on a couple of women. You got a busy day today.
Well, no, I am not a doctor. I work.
Damn it, Jim! I'm not a doctor. Sorry.
I work in Central Supply, you know. So I do a lot of stocking and a lot.
You're like Chico.
A lot of flirting, you know.
Yeah, you gotta. Do you get to wear the whites? You know, like.
No, we wear our scrubs. Are like.
Oh, you get to wear scrubs though. Very cool.
Well, it's kind of. Excuse me for a moment, folks. My nose is. draining a little bit because of my sinuses.
Dr. Bauman.
The winner. No, but yeah, I mean, Central Supply, basically, you know, you stock all the various supply rooms from the different departments and, you know, deliver stuff to the floors. They call down and ask for stuff. We try to help them find it and get it to them and reorder. And it's mainly centered around inventory. So, you know, it was my weekend of work. I work every other weekend there. So
yeah, you haven't done like a game for us like in months, years.
It feels like it.
I had to do play-by-play.
Did you?
That was fun, though.
Yeah.
Mark Donnell.
Yeah, Michigan recruit. Yeah, we're doing.
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about Michigan, are we?
We're in basketball season now here on Toledo Sports Network, baby. So I'm excited for some hoops too. I'm looking forward to doing a game, but we got the schedule this weekend, and it was a little mixed up, and I was working a lot, and you know, but it still turned out okay. We still got them in a barrel, right?
Yep, we're in the air.
We still got them on the air. They were in the barrel, and we saw some talented kids. And how was Lake's new gym, by the way?
That's a beautiful gym.
Is it nice?
It's beautiful, yeah. It's set up, it's very friendly for us. It's very friendly for us. And we've got, I know we're going to be back in there in just a couple of weeks. I think we're doing the Lake Woodward game, which should be an interesting matchup. Just a little track and a little NBC conference together. And
Woodward or Woodmore?
Woodward.
Oh, Woodward. Oh, City League. City League.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're not on the track. What am I thinking of? Sorry.
City League. Yeah, that's cool, man.
It'll be good.
Yeah, speaking of the track, the Three Rivers Athletic Conference here in Northwest Ohio, we had two teams from Toledo make it to the state championships for high school football. So, yeah, we're going to give that a little golf clap.
Yeah, very nice.
Little classy little golf clap. But one of them, my alma mater, Central Catholic High School, shout out, baby. They won the state title. It was the first time since I was a senior 7 years ago. And they had a tough game. I think they scored 16 in the first half, and then they didn't score in the second half. And Trotwood Madison, who's a really good team from the Dayton area, I think it was their third straight state championship appearance. They scored like 12 points in the fourth quarter, and Central was able to stave them off for the 16-12 win. And then Whitmer, unfortunately, lost to Cincinnati Moeller. But it was a close game. It was a good game. But, you know, it would have been cool to have two from Toledo. Yeah. But I think the fact that we had two in it is saying something.
Heck yeah.
That's huge for the city of Toledo. And I think it kind of definitely legitimizes the football that we have here. You know what I mean? Because for so many years, Cincinnati and Cleveland and even Columbus have kind of had these clusters of teams that have really dominated the high school football landscape once it's playoff time. And I think for Toledo to have two in the state championships in different divisions, that was pretty cool. So like I said, golf clap. Shout out to my Fighting Irish. And beyond that, man, like I said, we're rolling right along here on Bauman's Breakdown. And once again, I can't thank you guys enough. Those of you who listen, maybe the four of you that are subscribing to every single show on iTunes, thank you so much.
You only have four people? You've got 4,000 there.
I don't know. I mean, the last time I checked the channel at bauman'sbreakdown.podbean.com. See, it just sounds cooler with Matthew, at bauman'sbreakdown.podbean.com. All right. But, man, if I was born with Matthew McConaughey twice, oh, jeez. But last time I checked, we were creeping in on 2,000 channel visits, which is cool. And, you know, the whole goal for this, I think what I had going into it, I think we've been doing kind of what I hope for, which is, you know, we get on, we do our little shenanigans, and I give the people, you know, a little insight into maybe some artists that maybe they're not familiar with, whether they're local or more indie. And some national artists, and you know, I'm gonna keep that going, and also I'd like to get, you know, maybe some local DJs. We were talking before the show, you know, I'd like to get some guys that have been around here for a long time.
I will get a hold of Jeff Lamb. We can get Jeffrey on. That's not too big a deal.
Jeff Lamb's been doing stuff in Toledo for years. I mean, he's been one of the guys that's been a local staple in terms of sticking around.
Yeah,
the
but
area
don't make him sound old.
You know, well, you know, I'm not trying to make him sound old, but he's been around for a while, you know. And then Grizzly Bear, of course, he's been around at 104.7 doing stuff forever. I always listen in whenever I get a chance to him, just because he's just so awesome. The High Voltage. I mean, he's got a very got a very unique voice. So I think it's. I hope you guys have enjoyed the material I've been giving you. And like I said, that's my goal, to mix it up. You know, you can open up any magazine on any shelf across America and read about, you know, the people who are, you know, at the top of the heap, so to speak. But I think it's cool to mix it up and give you guys, you know, either up and coming artists or artists locally that I think are really worth, you know, you checking out that you wouldn't know about otherwise if you weren't from this area.
Yep.
Because I love music. You know what I mean? And I respect all kinds of music. I have a visceral connection with, you know, usually music hits me at a visceral level, and I have kind of a spiritual, not to get too crazy and trippy, but I do. Music's been part of my life my whole life. I've always loved it. I've never been musically inclined in any way, but, you know, I really, really like what we're doing with this as far as kind of how it's gone and mixing it up. And if you ever have any feedback, you can always email me at baumansbreakdown.podbean.com. My contact stuff is on there. Also at my blog, baumansbreakdown.blogspot.com, which that I haven't been keeping up with as much as the podcast, you know, because this has been, we've been able to find sort of a consistent medium, I feel like, with that. But you can get a hold of me if you ever have any feedback. But thank you for tuning in, man. It's cool. It's humbling. And I know I don't have a large audience in the grand scheme of the podcast world, but everybody starts somewhere. So for those of you who have been listening in every week, or maybe you're checking out the show for the first time, thank you from the bottom of my heart. And speaking of a little Southern flavor, this week's show, I wanted to bust out an interview that I did several months back in the summer with a guy who is from the southern part of the country and lives there, I should say, and that is singer-songwriter Beaver Nelson, who is based out of Austin, Texas, and he came through Toledo, actually Maumee. He was at the Village Idiot, which local listeners, if you haven't been there, check it out, man. He got some great pizza, beer, fun times. But he came here through the summer, and this is an interview I was kind of waiting for the right time to put on here and mix things up a little bit. I've given you guys a lot of rock and an alternative and things like that, and I kind of wanted to switch this one up a little bit and give you guys somebody who's you know, an independent artist, but one who is extremely, extremely talented. His career has spanned more than two decades now. And it started with some high praise from one little magazine. You might be familiar with him, known as Rolling Stone or something like that. But this guy's been around for a long time, and he just came out with his seventh album, Macro Micro, on June 19th. And what was really interesting about this project and this interview is, first of all, he was a really nice guy. I know I say that all the time, but he really was a down-to-earth guy. And we had a really good conversation about this latest project that he did, Macro Micro, because it was more than just an album. You know, in an era, you know, where everything's digital and everything right. is, there's new artists every day because of the internet. There's so many, which is great, you know, that so many bands are getting this exposure because of this medium, but it's also a little bit more difficult to really, you really got
to
look
to make money at it, yeah.
To make money and also to really look for the artists and the stuff that you like, because you really got to do some digging, which I think is kind of fun, you know, sure. Especially now, because you can go type in a video and it'll give you suggested artists and everything. But anyway, he didn't want to do kind of what everybody else is doing, which is, you know, go in the studio, record an album, tour. He wanted to change it up a little bit. So in addition to Macro Micro, the CD portion coming out on June 19th, this album is also accompanied by a huge, huge art project and an album-length film directed by filmmaker Steven Henderson, which is something that he brought with him live on tour. So basically, this guy was coming through towns with a screen projector, a vocal effects-styled mic, a laptop, a couple of guitars, and plugged in this projector. And with the movie portion going on in the background, he would play in front of it with these different guitars and have atmospheric guitar oh, wow. and stuff. I mean, to say that it's a concert really isn't accurate. I mean, it was a really unique experience. And the conversation that we had just talking about what it was like putting this together, it was really cool. Because like I said, he was really cool. And I think what he did is very unique, you know, and like I said, in a day and age now where there's so much technology and there's new bands coming out every day, it really is kind of hard to find a way to do something completely unique. And here he found a way to do it and had a Kickstarter project and his fans backed him up and helped him put this thing together. So it was just, I thought it was a really cool story. And the guy is such a talented musician. I mean, you really can't pigeonhole the music that he made on this record in one medium. I mean, he's talented on the piano, the guitar. He's got a great voice. The lyrics definitely came from the heart, and it's just it's one of those things that I think you definitely need to check out the album and the movie and just see kind of the work that went into it. I mean, it really is totally unique and very, very cool. So without further ado, I'm going to shut the heck up and let y'all listen to the conversation, baby. This is myself speaking with Austin-based singer-songwriter Beaver Nelson. Well, first, I just want to thank you, Beaver, for taking some time with me today, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no. The pleasure is mine.
There's so much I want to ask you, but I guess where I'll start is just what have these last 5 years been like sort of leading up to the release of Macro Micro and putting this project together? Because I don't know if you can really even call it just a record, because it's so much more than that.
After the exciting opportunity, I toured around, and it was kind of a protracted touring because I've got kids and I stuff going on here, so I didn't tour all at once. I kind of stretched it out a little bit, and by the time I got done with that, I'd realized kind of a year and a half had passed, and that's normally when I would be thinking about doing the next thing. And so I didn't really notice the passage of time as far as the creating things for probably about the first year and a half. But then after that, and I started thinking all my thoughts about what would be coming next, I knew it was going to be something very, very different. And then I started writing the songs on piano. I started writing most of them on piano, which is not my first instrument. I've written on piano before, but I would never sit down and play piano in front of anybody. And then at some point in the process, it occurred to me that I actually wanted to play the piano on the record, or at least parts of it. And so it took me a very long time to write the songs, partly because of the nature of the songs, but partly because this logistically, the instrument I was writing on, it just physically took longer because I couldn't move as deftly. I'd have to memorize as opposed to just I'd have to learn how to play it before I decided whether it was good, whether I liked it. So that took a while, and then the nature of the pieces, they were so much more complicated, or that I was hearing them in a more complicated way. And so the whole thing, it got stretched out, but I found myself not in really much of a hurry. I guess that brings us to about a year and a half ago when the studio called and said, "Beaver, you seem stuck," because I've been talking to him, and I said, "You seem stuck. Why don't you come in here and start demoing up some of these songs and see what we've got?" Because I was stuck in that, not in the writing of all the different pieces, but in knowing how they got put together. I was writing stuff I couldn't play, and I didn't know how long the songs were. I was writing pieces, and so I went in and did both songs up, and then from there I was able to actually kind of start forming what I had, and then from there then we went in and I brought the band in and we recorded. I should say I'm been playing with the band with much regularity over the last several years, and so I was working in isolation. I didn't have, it used to be where, sound check or at a rehearsal or whatever, I could, "Hey, would you play this? Would you play this?" And then I could hear instantly kind of what I liked and what I didn't like, and I would have that feedback, and I could go back while I was writing. But in this case, I didn't have that opportunity, really. wasn't playing with them, so I had to really kind of hear things in my head in a really intensive way, and so because of that, I ended up playing a lot more of the parts than I normally would. But I rambled on there. Where should we end up here with that?
No, that's cool.
I guess I made the record, and then I instantly remixed the record and created an instrumental version of the record. As soon as it was mastered, I went back and remixed it to create an instrumental version of the record that's synchronous to the CD that you have heard. And then we made part of a film for it, for a couple of the songs, a couple parts of songs. And then we ran a campaign on Kickstarter, and I raised enough money to make a whole film and kind of help fund a tour and, you know, all that stuff. And well, I raised the dough, and so we made a full-length movie. And so how I'm touring on this record is with my screen and a projector and a couple guitars and a mic, you know, with going to a vocal effects pedal, so I can get double vocal effects. And then I perform in front of the screen the entire album with the instrumental version of the record. So I come out of the audio jack of the laptop, and so it's a full-on thing. It's kind of, there's three things going on. You're kind of listening to a record, you're kind of seeing a film, and you're kind of seeing a live performance. And my aim is to have people constantly kind of having to, while absorbing it as a whole, constantly kind of having to choose, like, or figure out, what is this? What is this? What is this presentation?
So when you remix it,
it's not really like something I've seen anybody do, and it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, so I mean, when you remixed it, do you mean you took out all the vocal parts so that when you do it, you do your live performance, you can sing it and then have the film going on in the background?
Yeah, and I took my guitars, you know, a lot of my guitars off of it too. And what I'm doing is I'm carrying a regular guitar tuned down a full step, and then I'm carrying a Nashville high strung, so that. Which is basically just the high six strings on a 12 string guitar, but I'm only using six strings, and then so I'm able to drop in a bunch of atmospheric guitar that actually isn't even on the record, but doesn't collide with what's going on the record. So, you know, there's some new interesting musical parts that are in the live performance that aren't even on the recorded version.
Well, it's
its own animal.
What I find interesting about this too is, like, you know, you mentioned that you wanted to do something different, but I guess my question is, like, when you decided to go in and do it from a piano perspective and not a guitar perspective, was it because that was just the different direction you wanted to take, or was it because the songs that you were hearing in your head, just you felt like starting out on the piano would have been the right way to approach it?
Some of both. There were some where I had a clear notion of what I was trying to do, and then partly it was kind of just being inspired by various and sundry family members who I would watch practice piano all day, and or, you know, every day, not all day, but and that I knew some rudimentary stuff about piano. I understand theory and all, but I'd never worked on something long enough where I could perform it on a piano. And plus, I just think you write very, very different songs. I've done a couple chord changes on piano that it would have just never ever occurred to me on guitar. Just the lines, you can see them. You know, it's left to right. It's not kind of getting chopped up every five frets, you know, the lines. So you just see things different.
Now, how did your relationship with Steven Henderson come about? I know that you met him, obviously, before you decided to put this project together, but
right.
In terms of making this a film, how was that process and how that relationship come about?
Well, it's interesting. I met Steven before I made the record, so a couple years ago, a little over a year and a half ago. I met him at an artist retreat at a place called Laity Lodge in Texas, and he just had his camera all the time. He was shooting film or taking pictures, and it was a place I've been going to for about 30 years, and it was his first time there, and so I've been going there since I was a little kid, and so he got stuck rooming with me, and so we got to know each other, but he was always shooting, and he was actually going to be moving to where I lived, or had just moved to where I lived, and we talked about doing something like this, and not this extensive, you know. He had thought about, you know, he had thrown out there, hey, maybe we can make a music video. And I said, all right, I'll tell you what, you know, I got something a little more intense in mind, but I'll let you know when I get this record made. I'll let you know, because I just kind of started forming some ideas, and so I waited until the record was done and let him hear it. Asked him if he would be interested in making a full length film, and he said that you know, we started putting budgets together and trying to figure out how to do that. When we figured out how much money we needed to raise to make something like that happen, and we're able to do it. That's really how that happened. But I will say this: there is footage and two or three places on the record, or on the film, that are taken from the weekend that I met him, I guess a year and a half ago, where he was just shooting, and then I had remembered that he had shot stuff, so I had to track down a couple people from a year and a half ago and ask him if they didn't mind. Did mine showing up in the movie? They all said yes.
Was it just a matter of when you were crafting these songs that you thought that it wouldn't be complete unless there was that visual element to accompany it?
I'll tell you how that started. How it started was this: the visual element. It started this way. I didn't know how to go out and play this album without a lot of the musical elements. So say the talking in the background, the subconscious, or, you know, certain drum lines, certain rhythms, the certain piano parts. I mean, all of those instrumentals. I mean, there's no way I'd be able to pull those off, and I didn't want to haul up a piano, and it wasn't going to work with me playing solo. I could have played maybe half the record live, but I couldn't play much of the record live. Couldn't play as much as I wanted to. So I started trying to figure out how to take some of this music with me. So the idea of remixing the record, getting the instrumental versions, and then playing along, that came about. So that was the next step. Then the step after that was realizing, well, okay, this isn't karaoke. Even if it's my own music, even if I recorded it, I still I'm not interested in just getting up and doing a karaoke kind of deal. That's weird. But what if I made it a play? And then the music could kind of come in and out, and I could join it and then go back to having this conversation with someone who wasn't there. That was the next iteration of the thing. And then I thought, well, how about some visual element to this? You know, this young man, Steven, here has offered to make a couple of videos. Why don't we could set up a thing and have it come in and out. And then I just decided that that whole aspect of the deal was so much more interesting to me than the original idea of a play, or just sitting and playing with canned music, for sure. That when I saw that we had the ability to, the funds available to make a full-length film, that's how I wanted to do it. So that's how it came across. I've got some longtime fans or friends or who have seen the movie and can't imagine that wasn't the initial intent, but it actually wasn't. I think that he did a very good job of mixing and matching, and yeah, I've been writing songs and making records for 20 years and haven't made so much as a 3-minute video before, so I didn't have to worry about repeating myself visually. You know, it was all kind of a brand new game for me, so I felt like we could pull it off.
I mean, and what you're doing too, Beaver, really is like a 100% unique approach. I mean, because when bands put out records, I mean, there's that cycle in the music industry of, you know, write the songs, record the songs, then go tour and play the songs for people, and then, you know, hit repeat. But it's like, with this, you know, and bands will come out with, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff or DVDs or live stuff, but to actually have, like, a film as well as the record really is a really super unique approach. I mean, as part of the way the music industry has gone, and obviously you experienced some of that in your early days, is that part of what made you want to do something so completely different too, is just sort of to break the cycle for yourself as well?
Oh, sure. You know, and I do need to say that, like, what made that possible was raising the money to do it, because at this point, I mean, anyone thinking like they're investing in, I mean, that's just, you know, like that they're ever going to get their money back in doing something this large is lunacy. I mean, someone may, you know, I'm not saying everyone loses money in the music business, but almost everyone loses money in the music business. And so, I don't really, when thinking about that in those sort of terms, it just, in a day and age when literally anyone can make a record, I just realized that if I made a record that anyone else could make, then they've already made it. And so I just had to take whatever thing that was unique about my perspective or my playing or my cadence or the way I see the world. I needed to go as far in that direction as I could. And then visually, that's for the record, but then for the film idea and for the live show approach, I had to trust Steven on a bunch of stuff visually and let him bring his unique vision to it. I certainly had some content ideas, and a lot of them were his, and the editing between Steven and Hassan was really good. It was just time to do something different, you know? The people donating and helping on that really made it possible for me to do this without having to worry about, you know, about how I was going to pull it off, you know? I had enough dough to do this thing and make it and go tour on it. And then, you know, hopefully from here I'll get enough response where, you know, by some other angle, you know, but I don't know, some matrix of economics, it makes sense. But artistically, I've never been happier about anything that I've done. So, and I'm really grateful that I get to go out and perform this and take this live and do it. It hasn't necessarily been everyone's cup of tea, but no one, but I'm getting, like, night after night, you know, people saying, I never seen anything like this before. Not one guy sitting there trying to pull this off, you know? And a lot of long-term fans have said that they like it tremendously. So there's enough of the kind of the organic, even with all the weird sounds and the instrumentals and the visuals and all that stuff, there's still a guy who sat down and wrote some songs and then is playing them for you. That's also happening, you know, during the show. So that's interesting. Again, it goes back to that kind of making them choose periodically, kind of shoving them in different directions. I'm listening to a live recording. I'm watching a film. Oh, there's a guy sitting there live performing this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and as far as the Kickstarter thing goes, I mean, you raised, according to the page, you had almost 200 backers for this project and were able to pledge almost $2,000 more than what the goal was, and that goal was $22,900, and you guys got almost $25,000. I mean, what does that feel like after all these years to take this direction and then have so many people say, yeah, we definitely want to see this come to fruition?
Oh, it's incredibly gratifying. I mean, it's patronage, you know, in a large way. And, you know, there's folks out there who, and there's people out there who are, you know, 35 years old who have never bought a record in their life, you know, 30 years old, they've never bought a record in their life. And then there are other people who just love music, and they, you know, if I wait until I put a record out, then what are they going to do? They're going to feel silly, like, well, okay, I'm going to buy 20 copies of your record and hand them out to people. I mean, they might do that, but if they know that, like, the equivalent of buying 20 copies of this record is going to make this record being made possible, then, you know, then they want to do that. They want to help make a thing possible. And there's no question in this case, they made a thing possible, you know? And so they have my undying gratitude for that. It's really a unique and interesting thing, and it's a lot of work on the road trying to do this show. And so it's really my desire to get as I know it's obviously self-serving, but it is my desire to get as many people to these shows as possible, because, you know, I don't know how many times I'm going to go out on the road doing this show, and it is unlike anything you've seen. So I hope we can get people who are interested or who don't know they're interested yet. I hope we can get them out.
Yeah.
And if they don't like it, well, they can come tell me they didn't like it. But I haven't had anyone tell me yet that I wasted their hour.
Well, and for this project too, what I found interesting, I watched a couple of the videos for the songs on YouTube, but I also watched the one video you did where you were kind of talking about it, and you know, they showed part of a performance with you setting everything up. And the one thing I found interesting too was you said, you know, this wasn't a concept record, but at the same time, like, I feel like it is very reflective, especially the song Sunday Morning with the piano. Like, it was just crazy to me listening to that, like, how that would, like, the piano part reminded me of, like, a Sunday morning. Like, that was really kind of a crazy, like, moment listening to that. Like, I was just like, wow, this is really different. I mean, as far as putting this record together, I mean, obviously, any time somebody puts something out, it's sort of like their worldview, but even some of the images and stuff in the movies, it's kind of like you were able to physically portray what was going on in your head. It seems like you were able to physically portray exactly what was going on in your head, and I feel like that is sort of like a really difficult thing to do, even if you are a seasoned veteran of music.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I gotta say, that piece, the Sunday Morning, is one of the most gratifying pieces of recordings I've ever done. I had the basic piano part down, and I had how I wanted it to go, and I recorded that in one pass with the bass and drums, and then, you know, they left, and I was kind of just alone with the engineer, and sat down and played that piano solo, and I'd never played one in my life, but I knew the rhythm I wanted, I knew my range of options, tonally, and just played, and it's definitely, when you take a guy who hasn't played piano all his life and say, all right, hit it, you know, it's obviously more of a feel thing than it is a technique thing.
Right.
And so I went as far into that feel as I could get. And it's waking up, you know, it's kind of coming out of it. And so there's some missteps, you know. It's that moment that you realize you're dreaming. So you're not really dreaming anymore. You're awake, but you kind of just slip back and forth until you actually wake up. And that's coming out of the rigors of Saturday night. I thought it was nice, a nice piece. And that was all designed to fit together in a certain way from way back when I just had the solo demos, but that I'd put together, you know, a year and a half ago, but being able to get to actually record them the way I wanted, it's really, really great.
Well, Beaver, there's just a couple more things I want to ask you, and thank you so much again for taking some time today. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
What has this ride been like for you? I mean, obviously, you mentioned, you know, this is like a little more than two decades deep for you now in terms of making music and putting records out there, but one thing I found interesting, especially looking stuff up about you and prepping for this interview, is that even though this project is very different, it also it seems to go along the theme of with what you've been doing your whole career, which is just sort of to take your own path and make the music that you want to make. And I just wanted to ask you about that, because in your early days, it seems like, especially now, I mean, it happens every day, there's so many young musicians who get that opportunity, and then they start to sort of produce the music that the higher-ups are wanting them to make, and then they eventually go back and try to make the music that they want to make, and there's that whole crazy cycle. And it seemed like right off the bat you just said, no, I'm just going to do this the way that I want to do it. And I just wanted to sort of get your perspective on that.
I can't claim that's 100% the case for me. I mean, I made a lot of recordings that you'll never hear, that were for someone else. And so I can't claim that right off the bat I was doing my thing. Although I had some earlier recordings, like when I was in high school and then right out of high school, that were me doing my own thing. They were imitative. They were my first steps trying to learn. But then I had a couple major label deals that went south and all that, and those recordings they weren't 100% me. I don't blame anybody for it. It was what it was. There aren't many 20-year-olds who know who they are and what they really want to do, and there aren't many folks who want to be judged, at the age of 40 by something they said when they were 20. So that's just as well. But once I finally started getting to make records that were coming out, I had a lot more. So, and linking up with a partner like Scrappy Judd Newcomb was just fantastic. Because he would nudge me in directions and that kind of thing without ever taking away what it was that made what I did unique. I just felt in this circumstance, because so much of the stuff was locked in my head, that I just didn't really have the option of working with a producer. I had to be one. And that freed me up a lot to just go. It pushed me. It made me go further and further into my thing rather than relying on him. I mean, he played on the record. He played excellently on the record. Now, everyone brought ideas in. But I certainly showed up with more ideas than I had in the past. And, I went in a couple directions that people were kind of looking at me like, you certain about this? Yes, I am. Okay.
And the last thing I'll ask you is just, you mentioned you have two daughters, right?
Mm. I have a son, 11, and a daughter, 6.
I mean, obviously, being a family man changes the game a whole lot too, and it's nothing new to you because, like, you mentioned your kid's age. But is making music something that you always want to continue to do, and touring it and making records? Is this something that you plan on doing for a certain number of years, or do you have like a stopping point in mind?
I don't have any idea. I mean, I'm going to tell the world something, and then the world is going to tell me something. What I mean by that is that I am absolutely driven to create. For what form that takes, or whether that means I'm going to get in a car and drive around the country forever, I couldn't tell you. I mean, if people aren't interested, it doesn't mean I'm not interested. It's possible that the world's interest in me will run out before my interest in the world runs out. I don't have any idea. And that, which is not to say, like, well, I figured out if I sell this many copies of my record, then I'll be going out. I mean, that's like, I don't know how to quantify these things. Ideally, yeah, I would be going out on the road and playing music for people who want to hear it, and songs that people want to hear, and all that stuff, whenever I want, which, might not be. I don't want to be on the road 10 months a year, I mean, if that's the question. I don't have any interest in that. But, I'd like to be out there. And if there's demand for me doing this, and then it makes sense, because if I can make money on the road, well, then I come home, and that's time at home. I don't have to work, so that's time with the family, as opposed to coming home and painting houses.
Well, Beaver.
So I stopped trying to quantify this a long time ago, and I've been much happier since. You know, I do my thing. I do whatever it is. I try to view it in not in purely artistic terms, but in mainly artistic terms. And then I judge my success or failure, or someone else judges my success or failure on those terms. And, you know, I think that's not for me to determine whether something I've done is good or not. But I do believe I've at least given people, I can state that I've given people, like, room to pause, to consider, like, is this worthy of my attention? I think I certainly have given people room to pause.
All right, everybody. That was Beaver Nelson, Austin based singer songwriter. Like I said, man, that was incredibly fun talking to him. I really enjoyed our conversation, and for him to give me the time that he did, I was very appreciative of it. We kind of talked about the whole scope and, you know, stuff in his career, got into the nitty gritty of Macro Micro, which you can purchase on online retailers, you know, Amazon.com, all that stuff. Also, go to his website, beavernelson.com. To get all the links and all the deets and all the goodies. I know he's got a show. If you're in Austin, Texas, just don't miss this guy. He's going to be playing on December 12th, I believe. So make sure you check him out if you are in Austin, Texas. You don't have anything going on the 12th, man, because I really think you're going to enjoy the show that he puts on with Macro Micro. But just like I said, Mikey, just a really nice guy. And I really thought that this particular story that I did for the Free Press back in August was really cool, because it was incredibly unique. You know what I mean? It was something sure. That it was like nobody was doing what he was doing. Nobody did this. I mean, there's great stage shows now. There's incredible lighting, especially if you go to the summer festivals. It's just massive and awesome. Which is great, you know, but I think for this guy to come into clubs like that, I think it's cool, because there's that element of, what is this guy doing? He's walking in with a couple of different guitars, and he's got a projector and a laptop, and it's like, what's going on? And I think it's cool, because, you know, there's different things going on, and it's all cohesive, and it's coming out of a guy, like I said, who right. Music's been part of his life, man, for a long, long time. This is his seventh album, and for him to get this deep into the creative aspect of it, I thought that was really cool, and for him to be really nice and cordial and give me the time that he gave me was pretty awesome. I mean, anytime somebody is touted by Rolling Stone is one thing, but for him to be touted as a teenager for his songwriting ability, if that doesn't give you an idea, if right. You're not familiar with Beaver Nelson, the type of musician ship that's in his guy and the type of musician that he is, make sure you check him out. Like I said, go to beavernelson.com. You can get his links and everything on there. You can find out a little bit more about him on that website. Keep up with his tour dates. And yeah, man, I just want to give a shout out to Tracy for giving me the permission to give this interview to you guys. And I also want to say thank you once again to Beaver. I really love talking to you, man. It was cool. And I hope 2013 sees you well, my friend. It was awesome, and I think that you definitely put together something that is really cool and really unique. So check it out, everybody. Check it out. And Mikey, man, I can't believe we're not only episode 11 on here, buddy, but on top of that, I mean, we're coming up on Christmas. Isn't that crazy?
I'll tell you,
2012
yeah.
Seems like it's been the fastest year of my life. Honestly,
it just blinks. Yeah, it's gone. It's all gone. It's all gone. Next thing you know, it'll be, well, no, it won't, because December 21st, you know, we're the apocalypse. So maybe that's what
oh,
it
that's
is.
Right. What's today? Well, we're the today's a, this. That's right. This is going to be getting you guys on Friday per usual.
The 7th.
So yeah. So today's the 3rd.
Yep.
When we're recording this, so man, we've only got 18
you got
days.
Five more days then.
Yeah.
They only got 5 more days if you know you believe in the apocalypse.
Well, I thought it was December 21st, right?
Oh, no, you're right. I'm thinking the 12th. Never
is it
mind.
December 21st?
Yeah.
Well, who knows? Maybe there'll be like a big lunar eclipse or something on the 12th, and we'll all be in darkness for like 2 weeks. Darkness falls across the land. The morning hour
No,
soon.
The midnight
There's
hour.
A midnight hour midnight soon. Hour. I screwed it up. coming near for you to return, something like that. But anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Like I said, bombsbreakdown.podbean.com. You're probably there right now listening, or maybe you're taking a jog and you got my voice back and forth going across your eardrums and your noggin as you're chugging along, and you just heard a great conversation with myself and Beaver Nelson, and hopefully it'll inspire you to check out that CD if you haven't, that not even called a CD, that massive project that they put together, and kudos. I mean, and also, check out filmmaker Steven Henderson, man, young guy that he worked with. Check out his handiwork, because, I mean, they did a pretty great job putting that together. But, yeah, and you know what? It's been a good year for music, Mikey. And as a DJ yourself, I got to ask you, what album, and I know you listen to all different kinds of stuff, but I know music's been a big part of your life for a long time. What album for you was one that was something that maybe you stumbled upon, and all of a sudden it was like, whoa, this is friggin' sweet. I can't believe I didn't see this sooner.
It's hard for me because I'm all over the map. I mean, I had you listening to some Molly Hatchet last week.
That's right.
And you know, that I love that Southern cooking, you know, Skynyrd type, you know, Southern rock. But then again, I love, you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, man. I could sit and listen to them 24 hours a day. Stevie Wonder, it's, you know, I'm all over the map. I just, you never know where I'm at.
Well, you're not an old guy, but you are older than me.
I'm an
so
old
I will,
fart, yeah.
I will ask you, let me phrase it this way. When you were in your mid-20s, when you were like 24, it's, you know, I'm approaching 25 here. I'm starting to get up there and get some crow's feet. I know the rest of you that are older hate me. You're like, listen, that's a little punk talk about. But when you were my age, when you were cruising, when Mike Jameson was 24,
cruising
25, what was the album that you had on rotation?
Twenty-four. It was probably a lot of hot. Well, at this point, called old school now, which you know was the old Parliament and the old Rick James and stuff like that.
The funk.
I was funk. Yeah,
you were into
the
funk.
Yeah, I was hardcore funk then. But I was DJing in the nightclubs then too. So that's what we did.
You're getting your groove on.
I was getting my groove on, and I still do that a lot.
Was that George Clinton in Parliament?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. Before and now he's been doing his solo thing for.
Yep. The P-Funk. Yep.
Taking the funk to heaven in 77, baby.
Yep. So, yeah, and then, you know, and then I could, it just depended on the mood. It could be James Taylor. I'd be in a James Taylor mood. You know, it could be Gordon Lightfoot. The legend lives on from the, you know, because I grew up in the CKLW age, you know.
Yeah.
Byron Nelson, CKLW. That was, that's when I wanted to be a DJ, you know, and then dun, 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 you know, and that's, you know, so you listen to all of that CKLW stuff, you know, so that was, and I, you know, I've always grown up in radio, had the boys, you know, my dad was involved with WOHO, we're at, you know, we're 1470, which used to be called WOHO, number one station in town, it was awesome, Mojo Man, all the Jay Richards and all the guys, it was just, you know, you could just sit there and watch some guys spin records and just sit there for hours and watch them.
Was there ever a record that you stumbled upon that maybe you had no idea and either through somebody or you were thumbing through a record store and you're like, oh, this looks interesting. I'll check this out. And it ended up being an album that you really attached to?
You know, it's kind of funny. It's a jazz album now. And this was back, I used to install car stereos over at Car Stereo 1 back when I was, I don't know, 19, 20, you know, back when Fred Bumgarner had it. And this guy's name's Michael Colombier, French guy. He's, as a matter of fact, he passed away. Real jazz stuff. But that it would be like one of those CDs or one of those, it wasn't CDs then, it was tape. We put this tape in just to check the sound system and everything. And it was just the greatest jazz. It was just awesome. And you can't find it anywhere. Even to this day, I can't find it. And I would love to have that CD if I could find that CD. I mean, it was just different music. And then I play bass, you know, so I love country music.
Yeah.
You know, so, and my grandpa and I used to sit up in an attic and play old Hank Lachlan records. And he would play steel guitar, and I'd play the bass. And, you know, I was, I don't know, 10 years old. You know, it was a lot of music there, man. There was a lot of music in my life, you know.
The first CD I ever bought, I'll never forget it. And it's funny because as you get older, and like I said, I know I'm not trying. Nobody wants to hear my little quips, but this is my friggin' show, all right? It's my show, all right? So I'm going to talk, all right? You got it? But that's kind of my weak impression of Joe Pesci.
Okay.
What? How am I funny, Mike? Here, you be Ray Liotta in that scene. He was like, what? The way you tell the story. All right, well, just real quick.
All right. Now, what do you want me to say now?
Wait. No, you said it. You said it. Mike, you said it. How am I funny? What, am I funny? I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm here to amuse you? Is that what's going on? What? Speak
you're,
up.
You're a funny guy.
How am I funny?
I don't know how to go there. You're funny. You're just funny.
Like a clown? Like I'm like a clown?
Yeah, you're kind of like a clown. You are.
You mother... No, just... Little Goodfellas there for you. But no, I was 9 years old, and what I was about to say before... Wait, Joe Pesci. My weak Joe Pesci impression. Maybe I should just stick to McConaughey. All right. But you get a little bit older, and you kind of realize, you know, especially when you're young, I think I hear a lot of people say, oh, I don't really know what I want to do. I don't know You know, and I think there's a lot of pressure... just trying to figure that out. And I think the problem is people don't look at, like, man, there's gifts that you were blessed with from birth, and it's just a matter of discovering those and figuring out how to apply them and stuff that you enjoy. And ever since I was a kid, I always loved music, and I always liked writing. It kind of came naturally. I won a creative writing award when I was like 7 years old in first grade from some story I wrote about a leprechaun, some one-page story. But, you know, I mean, it was kind of, I look back on that now and I'm like, man, I was 7 years old and I was doing this. So,
Right.
But my older brother, Brandon, was, you know, he's 30 and I'm 24, so he's 6 years older than me. So, you know, the mid-90s, that was kind of the tweener time between post, you know, between the grunge.
Sure.
You know, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, all those bands from the early 90s, and then kind of shifting in sort of to the new metal. You know, and at that time, Korn was huge.
Right.
He was also a big Metallica fan, and you know, the 80s, right, you know, Guns N' Roses. And so, but he really loved Metallica. So, you know, I wanted to be like my older brother. You know, he would come over, you know, a couple weekends a month, and I'd follow him around like a little dork, you know, because I love him. But he was really, he's, you know, still, you know, we kind of have the same taste of music. But a big reason I got into Metallica initially was because of him. I wanted to be like my older brother. And I actually ended up finding that, you know, heavy music is kind of where my personal vein and taste is in. But my grandpa, rest in peace, I love you, Gramp. He would always give us, you know, money at the holidays and stuff. He'd give us $10 or something. And my grandma would give us a card or whatever. And I think it was with that money that I ended up getting my first CD, because I don't know otherwise why I would have $10 as a 9-year-old, because I didn't have a job, didn't do nothing for money, you know.
Shame on you.
But it was like a Sunday afternoon, and there was a place in town called CD Warehouse over on Monroe Street, and it used to be next to this place called Hobby Lobby, which I don't know if Hobby Lobby's still there.
Right.
In West Toledo. And I went there with my mom. And I didn't know any Metallica's album names or any of that. I was 9 years old, you know. So I walk in there, and the song that was on the radio at that time, their big hit, when everybody was freaking out after they cut their hair and everything, and they came out with Load, and it was more of a, you know, in the hard rock direction, kind of, you know, they from the Black album, that was kind of when they went away from sort of the metal of the 80s that they had been doing. You know, there's a bunch of hits on that record that did well in the mainstream, and then people were giving them crap for going to the hard rock. But anyway, everybody knows the story of Metallica. So Load comes out. This is like 96 when that came out, so I was in third grade, so this is like 96, 97. And so I remembered Until It Sleeps, you know, and I love that song. still to this day. And so I go into the record store and I'm looking around, you know, and there's just CDs and stuff everywhere. So I just find something that says Metallica Until It Sleeps. And that was back, you know, when they were really making money on CDs and stuff. So you'd get like the 3-song EPs where there'd be like the radio single. Then there'd maybe right. be like a live track or two, you know, just be 3 songs, you know, back when compact discs were doing well and bands were and record yeah. companies were making money off that. That's what they would do with the albums and everything. So I pick this thing up. It just says Metallica Until It Sleeps. And I go home, and my dad's a handy guy, and he had a nice, you know, entertainment system set up at our house. He's still these old speakers. It still work great to this day. And I put the CD in, and it's going, and, you know, dun, 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 dun. So tell me, Until It Sleeps is playing through the stereo system in my living room at my house, you know, and I had it turned up a little loud, you know. And so the studio track of Until It Sleeps gets done. I'm like, yeah, Metallica. Then the second song comes on, and this one is not a studio track at all. In fact, it is one James Hetfield on the mic saying Mother Bleeper several times into the microphone to pump up the crowd during a live show. Yeah, mother, let's go. And my mom just comes into the living room. She's like, Mike, sweetie, you're going to have to take this back. So literally within hours of purchasing my first CD, we drive back to CD Warehouse. I'll never forget the face of the guy behind the counter when we got there, you know, because my mom's like, yeah, it's just, he's young, and they're swearing, and I just, you know. And the guy's just kind of looking at me laughing like, all right, little buddy. So that was my first experience, man. You know, James Hetfield's MFers. Wow. I had to take it back within the same day, but yeah. So I'll never forget that. And you know what? And ever since then, I mean, in the last year, I've probably purchased, geez, like 30 some albums. I mean, like my iPod, I have like a 30 gig, and it is chock full. Like I have to take stuff off there now. But just because I love music, I've always had a, you know, like I said, a connection with it. I think for me, heavy music is just sort of the vein that I kind of like. But I also grew up with a lot of different stuff. You know, my mom was into 80s stuff, The Police, and, yeah. you know, and then Sting, all his solo work. Oh, my God, she loves Sting. She listens to, like, 2 things. She listens to Sting and Earth, Wind, and Fire, which are very good choices.
Sure.
But it's either, you know, it's either that or it's, like, Fields of Gold. Like, that's what I yeah, get, yeah. you know. And then my dad was big classic rock, big Southern rock guy, so... And then my oldest brother Brandon, he was really into, you know, the heavier stuff, and I kind of found that that's where I kind of feel at home for the most part. But I listen to a lot of different stuff, and so yeah, you know, just discover what you like. There's still every town still has a couple of record stores, and yeah. I just suggest that you go there. The guys there usually are pretty cool. They're big, huge music fans, and we've got a couple locally. That you know, shout out to Culture Clash and Ramalama and Shaken Street. Culture Clash got me the vinyl of Crack the Sky by Mastodon, which is one of my favorite album covers and favorite albums of all time.
Oh, wow.
So you can still get whatever yeah. you want. There's a nostalgia to it. Hang on to it as long as you can. I know it's easy to purchase stuff digitally, but especially for an album like we did today, featured on this show with Macro Micro and Beaver Nelson, it's just... you might have to purchase it online, but even if you get the CD itself, instead of just downloading it, I recommend that, because that and the movie portion is great. But yeah, Mikey, this has been fun. I think we're going to wrap her up here, and I just want to say thanks again, everybody, for checking out the show. I really appreciate the support. I hope you are enjoying yourself, and hopefully you get all your holiday shopping done before Christmas comes. And, you know, the important thing is just the family, you know. But... thank you for checking out the show. Make sure you check out ToledoFreePress.com if you're so inclined to check out my work as the writer. And also ToledoSportsNetwork.com, where you can check out our broadcast work, the different high school games as we do. And we've got some shows on there. People can tune in and listen online. We've got a couple of different shows. I know Dave Cheatham still does his show, right, with his buddies. We've got different stuff on there. You can go on there, check it out, check out our past games. And BallmansBreakdown.com, keep checking it out. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And also, remember, you can go to iTunes and subscribe for free. I hate sounding like a broken record. I know I say it all the damn time on this show. But if you subscribe, ladies and gentlemen, it helps us build the audience. So, yeah, if you like it and you enjoy the show, you know, it's free, man. Subscribe, and then you get the new episodes every Friday that they came out. So, without further ado, Mikey, thank you very much. I appreciate it, man. I really appreciate the time. And for the rest of you, keep the faith and be kind to one another. Peace.